And you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. You can catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast alongside my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am Brian Berga. And Jeff, I am excited here because, you know, we've been talking about the road to WrestleMania. You know, that's on everybody's mind right now. It's WrestleMania season.
You're excited like Shane McMahon was when he came out on Raw? Are your nipples hard?
Oh, my nipples are. They can cut glass right now. No question about it. You know, screw Christmas, screw New Year's. This is the holiday I look forward to most of all.
It's WrestleMania season, baby. It's
WrestleMania season. My gift is actually going there. And I'm also super excited, which has my nipples extremely hard now, is we have a special guest. You know, he's a pro wrestling contributor for the Miami Herald. He does great stuff for the Channel Guide magazine on their website, too, channelguidemagazine.com. You can catch him on Twitter. His name is Scott Fishman. He's on Twitter at SM Fishman. He wants to get 6,000 followers.
16,000?
16,000. So, you know, we're definitely going to help him out there as much as best we can. So, Scott, thank you so much for coming on the High Spot Podcast along with Jeff Martin. I'm Brian Berga. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I never had anybody get that kind of response. I never given anybody that kind of response before, I think.
Well, it's the first time for everything, buddy, isn't there?
You got that Shane McMahon thing going, man.
I guess so.
Exactly. You're swaggling, doing the Muhammad Ali shuffle, buddy.
Yeah, I can picture it. I got to practice that, I think.
Well, you got plenty of time for Mania.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so, man, this is like our Christmas for every wrestling fan, okay? This is like, you know, it doesn't get any bigger than WrestleMania month, and WrestleMania basically starts now. The whole talk and the hype starts in March. And, Scott, here's my question to you. How surprising was watching Shane McMahon come down to the ring on Monday night and have all that thing going on with him and then find out that he's going to fight The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell at Mania?
Yeah, I think that was like a 1-2 punch. I think you can always gauge whether the buzz is there for an appearance or what happens, you know, heading into WrestleMania by, you know, when your friends that aren't really wrestling fans or don't really watch. And, you know, they watch this time of year because it's WrestleMania, and they find out what happens with Shane McMahon, and you always get these messages, these text messages from people that you didn't even realize were still watching, telling you, oh, did you see what happened? So it's always great to have those big moments of nostalgia of back in the day during the Attitude Era. We always revert back to the past. It seems during WrestleMania time and when all these familiar faces come back. But this is, you know, someone that we really didn't expect seeing. I mean, there was a little talk about here and there over the years, but never, you know, much has come of it. So for him to come out and for, you know, the internet, not to spoil it, really. I mean, there was some talk online about something happening at the, you know, a big angle or something happening at the beginning of the show, but I don't think anybody had fathomed what we would be seeing with Shane McMahon coming out, let alone having a match against The Undertaker at WrestleMania. So they did a really good job setting up the match initially. So it's going to be interesting to see how this, you know, progresses over the next couple weeks.
Well, Scott, like you said, it was a 1-2 punch, definitely. I mean, it knocked me out when I saw it. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And it was exciting to see for the mere fact that, you know, sometimes it's a lost art sometimes that you can actually keep a secret in this day and age with everything in media and you know, everybody trying to leak out stories, which we love to hear. But when you did hear the announcement, you had time to kind of settle down and say, okay, Shane's here, and now he's going to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania. All right, that's a build. Could you sit back and think to yourself, does it make sense?
A little bit. I mean, I actually suffered a little bit of backlash because of some of my tweets that I said about Shane McMahon. Looking back, for anybody that questioned, you know, if Shane McMahon couldn't go at WrestleMania, to look back at his past matches, I think people took it the wrong way. What I was saying is, you know, he's capable of having these great matches in the past because of, you know, working with guys against Kurt Angle and things like that. So, yeah, it was a long time, you know, years ago. But it has happened before, so it's not just someone who hasn't been in big matches before against guys like Kurt Angle in their prime. So he's capable of putting on a great show at WrestleMania, and I have no doubt that he'll be prepared for that moment, just like The Undertaker will. So I think they'll deliver a good match. It's a different angle. It's something WWE, you know, really was their back was against the wall when it came to opponents for The Undertaker because, mm-hmm. you know, there was a lot of planning, a lot of talk about John Cena being The Undertaker's opponent, but that's not the case with him being injured. So they wanted to bring out something different, and I think they did a really good job of thinking outside the box for an opponent against The Undertaker. I don't, you know, we were getting to a point where, you know, who's going to be worthy of facing The Undertaker? It's such a, you know, it's such a milestone moment every year, even though he already, you know, the streak has already been broken, but it's still such a big deal to have someone face The Undertaker. I mean, and I would, you know, in years prior, I would have liked him to have matches against guys that really could be elevated facing him, like Bray Wyatt did. Even in the past, I even wanted to Wade Barrett. There was a point where I thought he would be a good opponent for The Undertaker. But, you know, having time to process things, it's a very intriguing match. And I know, like I said, that they'll deliver. But it's just I left scratching my head a little bit on Monday Night Raw when it came down to explaining why The Undertaker would do the bidding of Vince McMahon. I think they didn't really show a lot of explanation. I mean, besides the fact that it's WrestleMania and he has an opponent, I would have liked to see a little bit more. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks we get that as far as why The Undertaker would do, you know, what Vince McMahon says, basically, and being a pawn in this whole family feud.
Washing his hands of the entire thing himself, in a way, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I would think maybe, I mean, they could have even said that, you know, Vince McMahon created The Undertaker, gave him the opportunity all these years to do what he's been doing, and now he's, you know, he's paying it forward by doing this one thing for Vince McMahon. So I don't know what kind of explanation they're doing. That's just some, you know, my thought process when I saw the whole thing. They were building it up, you know, so much, and he comes in and does that quick little segment, and then it leaves me like, okay, that's it, basically, just grab. So, you know, we'll see. There's still some time left between now and WrestleMania, so I was quick to judge, just like anybody else. So hopefully they have more in mind when it comes to what's going to happen. I know Shane McMahon's scheduled for Raw on Monday, so we'll see what happens there.
Hopefully we'll see what happens.
Exactly.
He may just come in, say one word, and then leave and have us question even more.
I mean, I might even say anything.
Yeah, it's making things worse. A lot of criticism with the build as it goes forward. It's, you know, they started really well, and then, you know, I don't know what they're doing moving, you know, as far as getting people to talk. I think they feel like it's an established match already, so they just got to get to WrestleMania and have these little morsels for people to salivate towards moving into the main course. I don't know what's
salivating
going on
now,
that,
Jeff.
The only problem I have with that is that when you go at a snail's pace, especially when you're heading into Mania, and you know they have a tendency to just throw everything at you at the go home show for Raw. I kind of hope it doesn't turn out that way because I want to be able to, you know, have time to absorb this. And I know maybe Undertaker having that one few words with Vince kind of made us, you know, have the discussion like we're having right now. But, you know, everyone's talking about Shane and Undertaker, and here's my theory is, well, not my theory, but here's my thought. I think it's taken a lot away of the Triple H Roman Reigns match because I think that's not really, to me, the main focus right now.
And quite frankly, they needed that match needed kind of help as far as star power in a lot of people's eyes because, you know, WrestleMania, for better or for worse, brings in casual wrestling fans and has to attract casual wrestling fans as well. So Roman Reigns is fairly new, and there's still a lot of people that don't know about Roman Reigns. So they need another draw, especially when they're trying to break the attendance record of more than 100,000 people in Dallas. I think this is a good accompaniment. They may add a special referee. So they need to add something, quite frankly, to this match going forward because, you know, there's a level of predictability right now of what's going to happen. And you know, that's not, a lot of times that's not a bad thing, but in this case, they need more reasons for you to care about Roman Reigns facing Triple H for the championship and wanting to see him win at WrestleMania and beat Triple H because they have not really done an effective job of doing that unless the whole plan is to do like a sort of a double turn or turn Roman Reigns or something because, you know, especially when he got beat down on Raw at the end of the show and fans were going crazy about it, did not look good as far as if you want Triple H to be the role of the villain and Roman Reigns to be the hero. I mean, you saw a contrast of that this past week when Triple H essentially did the same thing to Dean Ambrose, and people were booing him. He got the different reaction. So, I mean, it's almost like maybe they should have went a different direction and had Dean Ambrose face Triple H. I mean, I was in the arena when it was down to Dean Ambrose and Triple H at the WrestleMania, and people were, I mean, not WrestleMania, at the Royal Rumble, and people were, you know, even though there was like another level of predictability, but you didn't really know. I mean, at this point, because you didn't expect Dean Ambrose to be at the end of the Royal Rumble. And fans legitimately want him to win. In the back of their mind, yeah, they thought, okay, Triple H is going to win. But there was a little level of doubt maybe that Dean Ambrose could have pulled it out and they were going to change their mind and do something different for once. But it didn't work out that way. But just, you know, the build for this match leading into a roadblock or whatever they're calling it, that's special. It seems they're doing a better job building that up than the actual WrestleMania match with Triple H, which is interesting. But
shakes
there's
my head.
Still some time between now and Mania, so we'll give them some slack, I guess, at this point.
So, speaking of Dean Ambrose, They were, you know, like I remember when Daniel Bryan got hot at WrestleMania 30 and they changed plans for Daniel Bryan. And CM Punk saying something to the aspect where it's like, well, I'm not the hot guy. Daniel Bryan's the hot guy. And, you know, Dean Ambrose right now kind of is the hot guy because the fans relate to him and they're backing him. And, you know, he has his criticisms. People critique him too. But it seems like the fans are more on his side than Roman Reigns. Do you think it'd be fair for the WWE to change their plans again like they did the past WrestleManias and maybe think of having Dean Ambrose in that match? I know he's taking on Lesnar now, but do you think they had thought of it maybe at all?
I mean, they had to have. I mean, you hear the reaction that he gets in comparison to Roman Reigns. It's almost like the majority of fans, you know, get that have a positive reaction to Dean Ambrose, where Roman Reigns is kind of like John Cena, this polarizing figure. And if they want a, you know, a top babyface, they need someone who's pretty much gets that a big reaction, like kind of like a Dean Ambrose. People sort of more, I guess, relate to Dean Ambrose. I think it's also the fact that, you know, Roman Reigns was shoved down everyone's throats, and he was a little bit overexposed for a lot of time. So people are kind of like rejecting because why should, you know, it's like taking your medicines. Like, WWE hears, like, here, Roman Reigns, and they're like, no, I don't, you know, I liked him. It's like too much of a good thing, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're over Roman Reigns now. So, I mean, I'm sure at some point they kind of thought that, but then you look at the audience, and then there's all the kids and the women and the reaction he gets elsewhere, like at appearances and things like that. And Roman Reigns kind of gives off this aura about him. I mean, I've seen him at appearances and things like that. And people really gravitate toward him. So it's also, we got to look outside the WWE universe and see, you know, what could appeal to other demographics outside of WWE, kind of like a John Cena. Like, do you see Dean Ambrose being on Good Morning America? Do you see him, you know, doing all these other events, kind of like a Roman Reigns? So WWE sees him as this overall company guy, which is why he's getting the push that he's given. But as far as on television, taking all that into account, it's like, it seems like Ambrose seems like the better pick for the whole thing. So it's really interesting. You know, one of my friends even suggested, like, maybe, who doesn't regularly watch, was like, why aren't they doing even like a triple fatal four-way match for WrestleMania with Lesnar and Ambrose thrown in the mix and just make it a whole fatal four-way? But I mean, I kind of want to see a one-on-one match. This just seems like the story they're telling. I don't see them changing course at this point, this late in the game, unless barring any injury or anything. So, you know, I feel like they are going to move forward with this Roman Reigns Triple H match. But it'll be interesting to see what they do at Road that's WWE special with Dean Ambrose and with Triple H, because it seems like Dean Ambrose is now pulling double duty at promoting the main event of WrestleMania that he's not even involved in, and then his own match with Brock Lesnar.
Well, you brought up a great point in that. I mean, what you're talking about before about, you know, this type of main event compared to Shane and Undertaker, you know, if you compare Triple H and Roman Reigns, it kind of seems predictable. You kind of saw the storyline building up towards it, all the odds stacked against Roman Reigns. Trying to compare the two and the way the storylines are going in, does this, the way it's being built up right now, and we have a month to see what happens till Mania, does Triple H, Roman Reigns take the main event? Is that enough to sell the card, or Shane McMahon, Undertaker, where it can go in so many different directions, you don't know what's going to happen, is that worth the main event?
I think the championship should be the main event. I mean, traditionally, as big as a Hell in a Cell match and as high stakes as it is, I think we should go back in history and make the championship as important as it should be. It should be the focal point. It should be like the crown jewel of everything going on at WrestleMania. So I think it should be the main event, I think, the championship match. Especially when you look at the storytelling that they've been building this up, you could think that they've been building this match up since last year during Survivor Series or even before that with Roman Reigns and the Authority. So I feel like that's the story that they've headed into WrestleMania. That's the one they want to tell, and that's, you know, that's what should be the main event, I think, of the show.
The only problem might be is that the Taker, Shane McMahon, they might throw everything at that match that
right.
The crowd might get deflated.
I think the important thing is to space it out. You don't want to have one after the other.
Yeah, so you wouldn't think like back to back.
Like two match buffer, I think, at least. Or maybe a one or two match buffer. I feel bad for who's going to follow that.
I feel bad if the Divas title is in between that.
Yeah, we both know it's going to be the Divas title.
I don't know. I don't know if the Divas title match would be the buffer. Maybe it'll be the secondary Divas matches that there's been talk of having another Divas match, because I really hope the Divas match isn't sandwiched in between that.
They should let that shine, because that's going to be a good one.
After all this time, and they finally have like this legitimate a little pull toward a legitimate women's division right now, and you have women who can actually go and people that genuinely care about this match that's happening. I think that really deserves to be kind of like a spotlight on them.
There's, we're talking about the matches so far that you can kind of have an idea that are going to take shape for WrestleMania. But, you know, you got guys like Bray Wyatt that are left out right now, who he's looking for a dance partner. Kevin Owens, you would think logically, you know, they planted the seed for an AJ Styles feud at the Rumble. And, of course, he went on Twitter and kind of was like, well, if AJ wants a title, you know, I got something for him. So what's going on with that? Why do you think we're getting Y2J and AJ Styles paired up and not maybe having possibly Kevin Owens and AJ Styles going at it for the Intercontinental title?
I think moving forward, there's some sort of plan with a multi-man match for the Intercontinental Championship. So they could easily throw Jericho and AJ in there with Ziggler and there was another guy. Oh, Miz. I mean, I could see that happening. I don't know. It's interesting that they paired them together with Jericho. I don't know if one's going to turn on the other. It seems like an eventual thing between the two. Maybe Jericho's, you know, tired of being the good guy and being in his shadow, or feels like AJ's trying to, you know, one-up him. But that's something I would like to see anyway. But it would be nice to see AJ in a one-on-one match at WrestleMania. I got excited about the potential of seeing him versus Kevin Owens, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be in the cards moving forward the way they're going with the tag team of Jericho and AJ. So maybe they're building it up as a team just to throw it in that match, and then kind of things, you know, blow apart between the two. I see like a multi-man match, you know, with those guys. Bray Wyatt, though, has been one of the most frustrating things for me and a lot of people, other people watching him. Seeing him get, you know, this stop-start when it comes to his pushes. First, they want to make, you know, the Wyatt family be this legitimate threat, and then they take them off, you know, prominent slot on television, and they kind of fall by the wayside. So it's almost like they forget about Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family. I mean, it's this lack of direction. I think, you know, he has all these promos and he gets TV time to talk, but then you're like, who is he really talking to? And what does he do? Do the writers even know who he's even talking to? Like, are they just putting him on for the sake of putting him on? Like, I mean, I know he's going through a hard time with his things going on with his dad, so I don't know if they want to, you know, put him in a situation, and then maybe he'll want some time off to deal with that. I don't know.
Is it his dad, or is it one of the Blackjacks?
Is it Blackjack? Oh, Blackjack Mulligan, yeah. Grandfather, right? Sorry about that.
Yeah, because Mike Rotundo, I think, is still.
He's still well. Sorry about that.
No.
His family, you know, maybe there's family things going on, and they don't want, you know, they want him to take care of that. So maybe that's why they're not putting him in a problem. I don't know what's going on with
that. Would definitely be a shame, though, Scott, considering the fact that he's had ample opportunities where he thought they were going to pull the trigger on it. You know, one with Cena at 30, which looked like it was going to happen. You know, talking about legacy and stuff like that, and
yeah, just a great build to that. It had a great build.
They had this damage to his character. It's like, are people, there's going to be a point where people aren't going to care as much for him. I mean, when he comes out, like, his entrance is a big experience, like as the Undertaker's entrance. And they had so many they have had opportunity after opportunity to really elevate this guy, and they still have yet to do it. I don't know what's going on, if there's a struggle in the back of maybe there's someone who's not a fan of his, or what's going on. The same thing almost happened, you know, the same thing's been happening for years with Dolph Ziggler. So it does some damage to the characters and making them believe that they're in these, you know, these viable main eventers. They talk about making new stars. Here are some guys that they have the potential to do that, but they don't give them the vehicle to drive the car, essentially. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with Bray Wyatt. I have fear that they're probably going to put him in kind of like a six-man tag or something like that, instead of featuring him like they have in the past years.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see him on the card, but again, in that type of scenario, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for you or Jeff. I really wouldn't want that. I mean, as hard as it would be not to see him on the card, you just hate to see it because, I mean, like you mentioned before, it's all about legitimacy, and he's had lots of opportunities, or supposed opportunities, we don't know, to legitimize himself as a top guy. Obviously, he's going to have a long and healthy career, hopefully. I mean, The Undertaker will eventually be done, and so will John Cena, and you need guys like that to be built in the future. And that's one of the things Jeff and I always get pretty frustrated frustrated. It kind of sounds like it's sour grapes, but it's just frustration of just things being more legit, and especially with the fact you have so many injuries now on the roster, that it would be great and an opportunity opens up and a spot is opened up for Bray Wyatt. I mean, now would be best time than ever. But talk about legitimacy, though. I mean, I mentioned to Jeff, too, the thing that I tend to love more, probably more of a fanboy of it, is NXT. And I was mentioning to him, like, last year in San Jose, we had a chance to go see NXT TakeOver, and it was by far the loudest ovation I have ever heard. Now, I've never been to, for example, like an ECW event, but it kind of felt like ECW-like. Everybody was so into it from beginning to end, not one person left to go to concession stands or bathrooms. They were so into it. So, you know, I don't know if I'm pretty sure you followed NXT. I mean, right now, if you were to compare storyline builds from NXT to the WWE, I mean, what are you looking forward to more? Would it be TakeOver or WrestleMania?
I mean, for me, I still look forward to WrestleMania. It's just a nostalgia thing going back to years and years. But I get, you know, the energy is very infectious when you're in the building for a big, you know, like a TakeOver event or a big event for NXT. I mean, I've been to live events of NXT, and I've also been – I didn't go to the one that year for San Jose, but I did go to the TakeOver Brooklyn event during SummerSlam weekend. And same kind of energy, though. They were loud for everybody.
So you were the guy screaming in the crowd.
Yeah, right?
You were that guy. Yeah, exactly. Who threw that streamer in the ring and got ejected.
Yes. With the blue pants shirt over there. That was you.
You got me. But so, I mean, I think it's unfair to really compare the two for the simple fact that, you know, there's so many hours of television WWE has to produce. So it can get a little oversaturated. So we're left to kind of deal with that and trying to fill all those hours of television. Where NXT, they get to feature different guys every week, so it comes off as fresh. They have that hour of television they have to fill, and that's it. But they keep it simple. I mean, there's no over-the-top storylines. I mean, it's based on, you know, I want to be better than this person. I mean, that's basically what it boils down to. There's this competitiveness of, you know, and it should be kept different because you want to keep NXT as a separate brand, the alternative to their own competition. They're their own competition right now. So the money still goes to the same source. It still goes to WWE, but, you know, you almost forget you're watching a WWE product when you watch NXT, and that's how it should be. So, I mean, I'm excited for both. I mean, I think the cards are the card for NXT is really stacked as far as, you know, what fans want to see that are fans of professional wrestling and the brand. I think they're doing a good job of presenting that show and building it up the next couple of weeks. But for me, WrestleMania will always be that show that you look forward to, I mean, every year, no matter what. I mean, will there be better WrestleManias in other years? Yeah, of course, but it just has that built-in brand, that idea, that ideology for me anyway, and that just look back and you bring back all these memories, whether you're watching at home or you're watching in the stadium or the arena, all the guys that have competed there, all the guys and girls, and just having those big moments and wanting to see the big WrestleMania moments. So for me, it's on another level for WrestleMania to be kind of the show of shows to watch.
Well, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed. We still got time for WrestleMania, but when you see guys like Austin Aries and Nakamura who will be debuting at TakeOver, and you see guys like Finn Balor and Samoa Joe, wow, it's exciting for the wrestling fan. And when you see, you know, those kind of wrestlers that the wrestling fan likes to see, you know, what got me to want to reach out to you was your article on the Global Cruiserweights, and it's very interesting, and I just wanted to see your take. It'll be on the WWE Network, and I just want to make sure in July what we could expect from that.
I think it's an amazing opportunity for everybody involved. I think Triple H has done a great job in really reaching out outside of the WWE universe and cultivating that talent. Yeah, it's a good way. I mean, it's bringing them business and making them look good and maybe even recruiting some guys. But it's also an amazing opportunity for everybody to be able to get their name out there and all these independent promotions that could have guys involved. It's almost like like those past tournaments, the King of the Indies or things like that in the past, or you have representatives from different promotions involved. So just the thought of that in a WWE kind of environment is an exciting thought. And it'll be interesting to see who they choose, who they will recruit. You know, he mentioned in the story about him, you know, having Regal look, you know, scour the world, basically looking for the best of the best, and even the talent, the diamond in the rough, those that aren't really known yet, those aren't that have that big name value. So it'll be a mix of that and seeing if they can impress everyone and excel. I wonder, it's supposed to be kind of like a 10-week thing, kind of like a tournament thing.
Yeah, 32 participants, 10
yeah,
weeks.
Yeah, it'll be a great accompaniment to NXT, I think, especially with the audience already established, and that kind of audience will love this kind of, you know, atmosphere for this Cruiserweight series. I'm a huge fan of the Cruiserweights. I've always been, even back with WCW. I think that was the best part of, that's what got me into WCW and really excited about wrestling in general is Rey Mysterio, Jericho, also in Dragon, Jushin Thunder Liger, those things like that. So bringing that to the forefront and for Triple H to be able to put this project out there is just a great thing. And I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Listen, if there's anyone that I trust is Triple H. I think he has a great eye for what the wrestling fan wants, for just what the fan wants in general. And I think that the company is in good hands once, you know, he takes over, or even if he sticks to NXT, I think it's in good hands as long as Triple H, you know, has say there. But here's something that I want to talk to you that also has to coincide with Triple H and Stephanie and Shane McMahon is, now everybody wants to talk about if Shane McMahon wins against Undertaker, a brand extension. Listen, here's my thought on that. First of all, I hated the brand extension before because we had guys, and the most person I can remember is like, you had SmackDown cards that you had maybe two good matches, but then like the four others were garbage. I mean, I remember guys like Luther Reigns and those kind of wrestlers. And the brand extension to me just shows that if you have a 3-hour show like Raw and you're gonna brand extension and wear thin the talent, to me, I just don't see it working. I'm not a big fan of the brand extension.
I think at the beginning of the brand extension worked well, and then like you said, it kind of got like they were just trying to bring in guys, but it can be a good thing. I don't know if it's good right now, considering how thin the roster is, unless you're going to include NXT guys. But I think if it's done, it can be effective in kind of giving guys more time. Like a guy like Bray Wyatt, for example, maybe he's falling by the wayside, but on a SmackDown, maybe he'll be the top heel and the champion of that brand. So, and then have WrestleMania be the where everybody gets involved, you know, big pay-per-views. So it'll give that sense of making the pay-per-views mean something again. So there's definitely benefits to having it there. There's a level of excitement, a level of competitiveness during the brand extension. So I could see the good and bad. I don't know if right now is a good time because like everyone's being, you know, is injured or you know how thin the roster is. I don't know if people will be, you know, watching the show as much. But if you give them reasons to watch and you build and develop stars, it might be an interesting thing to kind of change things up again. I guess it would be a natural way of doing it with this whole Shane McMahon storyline. But I don't know if they planned that far ahead and where that was the idea. But that'll be a big thing because I don't know if you have to think about how USA would want that too, because then you're not going to have your big stars on SmackDown, you know, as big as stars. And then how that would, you know, the locker room would be affected by it. But I don't know. They would have to split up evenly, and right now their star power isn't even there, you know, for all the shows to have, so let alone a brand extension. But it's definitely an idea that could work if it's done right, and has been done right, but it also has been done wrong, as you have mentioned. But I don't know if they're going to go in that direction or not right now.
Well, in this case, like you mentioned before, the rosters is fairly depleted, as you can tell. So doing that right now in this course wouldn't make sense. But Scott, I want to go back real quick, though, what we were talking about before, about the article you wrote about the Global Cruiserweight Series, which is going to be on the network July 13th on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central from Full Sail University. Free plug there. I should be working for the WWE, right? For that, too, like I agree with you. I was a huge fan when I used to watch WCW and the Monday Night Wars, or the glory days, as I like to call it. We all enjoyed that time where you flip back and forth and enjoy watching cruiserweights like you know, Jushin Thunder Liger, Rey Mysterio, Dean Malenko, Ultimo Dragon, you know, all these great cruiserweights. And that's what really got me involved in it, including Jericho himself. He's my favorite. But one thing I remember watching, and it feels like I'm plugging the network here, because I remember watching the Monday Night Wars series they had on there, and Booker T brought something that was pretty close to home with me, and I thought was pretty legit when I think back on it, is that when you initially called them cruiserweights, and I know Triple H goes on the article talking about how, you know, people have misconception that this is still a big man's business, but when you label somebody as a cruiserweight, or what the WWE did before in the past with the lightweight title, are you pretty much kind of, you know, giving them a ceiling already if you put them in that type of category? Now, granted, they want to get these stars and sign them, but then if you already consider them cruiserweights, are you hurting them in the possibility of becoming the WWE World Heavyweight Champion?
I think that's if you're doing it right and you're portraying them like correctly, like a guy like Rey Mysterio is kind of, they've built him up, and he started out in like as in the cruiserweight division, and then worked his way up, and then I guess you know they retired the light heavyweight championship.
Yes.
So I think if you do it right in a way, I mean they're always going to be seen as in that light as far as comparing the size between the two. So I mean since it's been done in the past, and considering what the landscape of professional wrestling is in general right now, I don't think that would be a problem in labeling. And let's say they win the cruiserweight championship, and then they, you know, they get the opportunity to move their way up. I don't know if that's in the card. As far as having the championship back, I think if they're going to gauge, you know, the interest of it, and it's actually, if people are really invested in it, it resonates with people, maybe they'll actually explore the idea of having a cruiserweight division again. But
yeah, the only reason why I brought it up, though, is because Daniel Bryan was such an intriguing story. I was so sad to see him retire, but he was somebody you could have considered a cruiserweight, and it was just so much difficulty for him. If it wasn't for, obviously, the audience, and I think mm-hmm. we can both say that the audience really helped elevate him to become the top guy at that time. That just seems like when you're labeled a cruiserweight, just labeled basically a lightweight, that you're not the prototypical WWE superstar as a John Cena, for example, or Triple H. That just gives them even more of a ceiling and kind of shackles them where it is possible. It's happened before, but they've never been the main guy. I mean, I only say this in terms of concerns for guys like AJ Styles and Finn Balor, who I hope comes to the main roster at one point and is the guy. But yeah, I mean, that's the reason why I brought it up.
I mean, these guys, the weight division, the weight limit is even under those guys. And I mean, a lot of those guys, when you look at the weight limits that they're doing, I think it's a lot. I mean, it's a little bit less than what the cruiserweight division was, and even the light heavyweight division. I think it was like 215, 225.
Yeah, roughly around. I think it was like 215.
Yeah, so that can make it. I mean, they're fitting that parameter. You see a lot of probably guys that are looking for an opportunity to, you know, running the treadmill right now. I can't imagine like trying to be selective with that. I mean, I don't know if they're gonna like have a scale or something so people will know, or they're gonna make a gimmick. They're gonna gimmick it.
They should do it like the UFC, like a lightweight cruiserweight bout. The guys have to weigh each other on the scale.
Yeah, but they weigh each other. Yeah, it's interesting to see how they're recruiting people. I mean, it's not like people are sending in like tapes. They didn't say, oh, email or write, you know, this to this place in order to get an opportunity at this. It would be nice to see, you know, the process between, I don't know if that's in the cards, you know, as it gets closer to July, where they're going to have, you know, maybe fans voting or things, or an opportunity for you to see kind of what the process of weeding the other talent out to make that final, you know, group that will be participating in this.
Yeah, no, and again, we're here with Scott Fishman. You can follow him on Twitter at SM Fishman. Listen, you interviewed Triple H in person, or was this like a media thing, or did you get a chance to spend some time with him?
That occasion, it was more of a phone interview. It was a
phone interview.
I didn't get much notice about it. It was kind of like a day or two. They were like, hey, we have this opportunity for you to take. They didn't really tell me what it was either until after I agreed to speak with him. So, I mean, and actually in the back of my mind, I thought it had just something to do with, only because there's been rumblings about this for, you know, a couple weeks now. So it wasn't like a surprise in a way of them making this kind of an announcement, because it seems like something they've been trying to do for, you know, a little bit now.
Oh, because I was going to say, because if it was in person, I wanted to ask you what impressions you got of him. But even through the phone, it was you and Paul or Triple H?
Yeah, it was on the phone. Yeah, I mean, I've spoken with him in person before.
He's
one of those down to earth guys. Like, he's very like one of those down to earth cool guys that you can meet in business. Like, very genuine.
Oh, okay, good.
You know, yeah, very very good.
Yeah, no, I've always
what
wanted.
You see on TV, as far as the, you know, outside of WWE Universe, you know, on NXT in that role, you know, is what you get when you meet him.
So he's approachable. So he's approachable.
He's great in that. You know, he's great in that role. Is what he's developed, been able to transition, you know, outside of the ring. It's been amazing to see.
No, that's great. So here's my thing to you, and then I'll throw it off to Brian so we can talk to you a little bit of some TNA. But here is what I get from the cruiserweights. You got a guy like Kalisto, who's a U.S. champion. You got Kevin Owens, who's the Intercontinental title. Is there any way, if your name is not John Cena, that those titles can be saved at all?
That's all. WWE's court making it, you know, the focus and having them keep the championship. One of the things that I didn't really appreciate was when Kalisto won the title, it was a big deal, and it was a great moment. But having to lose the title kind of had it lose steam a little bit. I know they were developing a match, a rivalry for the Royal Rumble, but I think the way they went about it kind of, like, tarnished his reign a little bit. And it kind of took away. Yeah, it was cool to see him win it a second time, but you only get that one first time. So yeah. I think it kind of took things away, and that was kind of a reason, like you said before, why they kind of had these chances where they're trying to elevate someone like, you know, like John Cena has done with the championship. I think in order to do that, they really have to have Kalisto in a one-on-one situation in these matches where he wins and has this momentum, because there's a lot of times where there's guys that win matches and they'll lose the next week, even if they're champion. So I think the key in making it is kind of like what John Cena did is, or, you know, having these matches and then, you know, winning. Like, momentum is key when you're the champion, because a lot of times in these non-title matches, the champion loses. So I think things need to change as far as that's concerned, and where these champions have to really, you know, gain momentum in order to give meaning to the titles again. And I think Kalisto is a good, you know, has a good opportunity to do that if they're done right. Now with Sin Cara back, he's kind of back in the fold of the tag team division, so the United States Championship was almost take, you know,
gets in, lost in the back seat, takes the back seat.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope they revisit that, because it's not going to, you know, it shouldn't be kind of like a, you know, a backseat type of thing. It's a big deal that he's the United States champion, and it should be treated that way. Just like with Kevin Owens, like, he in a way has made it seem important because of how important that title had meant to him. When he lost it, he went crazy, you know, and so, and now he's winning again, and then he's losing matches. So, like they need, like you said, winning matches, I think, is an easy way of doing that.
Words to the wise, Jeff. You better pay attention and be taking notes.
This
guy knows what he's talking about, okay? I'd rather be talking to Scott more than me talking to you.
Look at this. 3 pages worth of
yes,
Scott
and,
Fishman
and
notes.
Scott just basically just took you to school. Thank you so much, Scott.
Shut me
I mean,
up.
I've been trying so hard to help Jeff out, and it's just been
no problem.
So
next time I'll charge, though, by the hour.
Yes, good. See, Jeff, get your wallet out.
All right, then, so we got maybe like 5 more minutes. Oh, next time, okay.
Oh, next time, exactly.
Next time, yeah.
Scott, what?
First hour is free.
First hour is free, exactly. Hey, you got to.
Hey, listen.
If you're ever good at something, never do it for free. I learned that from the Joker and Batman. But further talking about a lot, you mean you do a lot of great articles, and the ones that really drew my attention to were on TNA, and it seems to be the most forgotten league now in time, because everybody seems to be always be talking about WWE, SmackDown, Raw, you know, pay-per-views, NXT, and TNA seems to be getting lost in the fold. And I always, when I talk to Jeff about this, and we you know, as you can tell, I don't know if you can tell now, we really love this business of professional wrestling. We still call it professional wrestling, and we kind of relate it to like sports in general, like sports teams you have, where you know you have your highs, and then basically from that point on, you gotta rebuild the team. And TNA seems to be on the verge of rebuilding themselves. And guys that I am excited still to see is, you know, Ethan Carter III, EC3, and Eli Drake, which is articles you wrote about. And what I like the most about it is that you got in touch with these guys, and the way they spoke was more the excitement. There seems to be a hunger now in TNA to kind of reestablish themselves instead of bringing in the big names. They want to be the big names. I mean, can you just elaborate a little bit more on what it was like covering those articles for EC3 and Eli Drake?
Yeah, basically, you know, it's great to, you know, TNA is in this rebuilding phase right now. So the focus is on elevating and you know, bringing to light these new talents. It's almost like a necessity at this point, but it's also a good direction to have. During the best times of TNA is when they, you know, they had some sporadic, you know, name, they sprinkled in some name talent, but guys who can actually go in the ring and really contribute in working against guys who aren't as well known. And I think 2005, 2007 or so, you know, that was a great time for TNA. You had such a great roster. A lot of the guys on NXT right now were in TNA during that period. So it's just interesting to see how that's come to the forefront. WWE has kind of plucked out a lot of the guys from that era out to now being at the focal point of WWE. But one of my favorite things of TNA television, I said last night, is one of the best things they've done is the development of EC3 and making a star and really, you know, showcasing him. What he didn't get an opportunity in WWE. TNA has given the platform to grow this character and evolve this character, and he's really made the most of it. I mean, you're really seeing a star, I think, develop and someone that the company can really build itself behind. And talking to him multiple times, you can tell, you know, he's really kind of like in this quarterback kind of role where he's really passionate about TNA and he really wants them to succeed, and he'll do what it takes to really help them, you know, succeed. And he, talking to him, it seemed like he had no, you know, short plans, immediate plans of leaving the company anytime soon. So that's important. Same kind of situation with Eli Drake, where he wasn't really getting the opportunity for one reason or another. Maybe, you know, other things kind of affected that, but he never really got the opportunity to really showcase his abilities in WWE and NXT. You know, EC3 got a little bit more than Eli did as far as that's concerned, but still, same kind of situation where he feels, you know, TNA is given this opportunity to grow, and it seems like there's a more of a freedom in TNA that, you know, they're not walking on eggshells as far as being able to, you know, lend their input on what they feel like for their characters. And I think that really helps them come off more genuine or more comfortable on screen. I think it's been fun to watch a guy like Eli Drake. You know, you see him on the microphone, you see his diversity in working with a guy like Grado, and I've enjoyed his work as well. So, you know, the last couple of weeks especially, TNA has delivered some, you know, quality programming. I like the idea. I mean, they're taped far in advance, which, you know, one of the things that, you know, it's a necessity for them financially, but it's something that, you know, kind of like maybe hurts them a little bit, maybe a lot. I don't know, depending on people that appreciate it. But so is NXT, and people watch NXT. So I don't know if that's an argument to be made.
Yeah, I think that the main difference would be that, you know, even though NXT is taped, you still want to go out there and see the performance. And it seems like, you know, what I got from reading the articles on both of them, those guys, especially EC3, is that he seems to be one of two things. I read, very loyal. He loves the opportunity he was given with TNA, and they gave him the platform to kind of rise and now make a name for himself and essentially be the face of the company. And two, he really has that drive to go out there and have the best match every single night, knowing that he's probably not on the same level in terms of exposure TNA to WWE, right? Nobody's at the same exposure to WWE right now at this point, but he's not using that against them, and there seems to be a hunger from all the guys there, all the talent, that they want to go out there and have the best match possible, whether it's in front of 10,000 or 20,000 people, or even 10 people. They want to go out there the best match, and that's actually going to elevate them, even though the grass is greener on the other side sometimes.
Yeah, the talent, let's face it, TNA has never had problem on talent. There's a lot of times during their history where they've had a better roster than WWE at points. So that's never been the issue. It's also been the issue of TNA doing, you know, trying to be bigger than they are maybe at some points. So maybe taking these little steps is a better approach than what they have done in the past. So I think that they're doing is really well. They just need to be consistent. Consistency is the key, I think, with this situation is, and then also creating these compelling storylines. You know, one thing a little bit is missing for TNA that they need to help out, and hopefully that'll happen moving forward as people become more comfortable with a lot of the new talent and is telling those compelling stories, is creating an urgency, like you said, to watch the product every week. They're in a good situation on Pop as far as, you know, where they're available in more homes. They keep growing as far as homes. I'd like to see, you know, an HD channel, you know, down the line, at least for my availability is concerned. I think that'll help. But it's also erasing that dark cloud that's over their head. Like, I try not to be as critical with TNA as WWE, you know, on Twitter, social media, because, you know, they always get beat up. I mean, it's such an easy, you know, people always are quick to do that. And I'm like, there needs to be more people to focus on the good things that TNA does, because I don't think that gets noticed a lot of times. And they're very underrated as far as the quality of the show right now. That, you know, especially, I mean, last night I enjoyed the show last night. I enjoyed Lockdown, and it was really disheartening to find out that, you know, the ratings weren't as good for Lockdown. You know, it came up a little bit, you know, this week. But a lot of people were like, oh, you know, they don't want TNA to succeed. But, you know, overall, it's great for everybody. The more places that you can watch, the better competition quality of your the other shows.
Exactly.
So, and there's more places for guys to work. And if you're a fan of wrestling like you guys are, and I am, I mean, you would want these guys that entertain you and put their bodies on the line and dedicate their lives basically to this to do well.
That's why the Monday Night Wars were so good.
The last one was ECW,
WCW, WWE, and you saw all great talent all working their butts off to obviously be the best, and that's why we enjoyed the Monday Night Wars as much as we did. It's not fun when it's just one major person.
Yeah, the problem was, you know, as you had your one side, you were WCW or WWE, and then once WCW went into business, the WWE fan in you was like, yes, we won. But in reality, the wrestling business didn't win because...
Oh, I'm still mourning the loss of WCW.
It's okay, Scott. It's okay. You can relive it on the WWE now.
See, are you getting paid? Or
when you look back, you're like, man, I missed this time. And you're never going to get it again, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much. Maybe before Vince Russo showed up on WCW, that's the WCW I missed, not the last.
The argument could be made, but even towards the end of WCW, they still had some really good matches, like the Cruiserweight Tag Titles. Yeah. Like, I was a huge fan of the Cruiserweight Tag Team Titles. I don't know if you remember that, but...
No, we do, but at that time, I think it was so kind of down and you know, kind of slowly dying a slow death, as, you know, I'm trying to be kind here, that, you know, as cool and innovative that was, you're like, well, you know, nobody's really going to pay attention to it because everybody's looking at how bad it is. You know, they're picking on the negatives rather than focusing on the positives.
Exactly.
And you like to think that TNA, you know, will succeed now. You know, they're on pop. They got out of that Destination America debacle and fiasco.
That was terrible. And,
you know, but now there's reports that, you know, they're looking for investors. I mean, I think what happens is that once you want to jump on board and because they deliver good wrestling, okay?
Great talent.
But the thing is, I don't know if someone wants to invest into it if they know if it's not going to be there the next day. What do you think?
Yeah, they want to see stability. I mean, that's with any business. So if you're not, that might be hurting them as far as their reputation in the marketplace. But there's also an attractiveness to it because they have the history of, you know, on Spike TV generating that million viewers. They were the highest rated show on Spike TV. But, you know, for some reason, the cost of the production and things like that, I'm sure hurt them because it's so expensive to produce, you know, televised wrestling every week. Maybe some risks that they took also didn't help them as far as like that Monday night experiment. I don't know how much money they lost from that or other things. But, I think the key is to present themselves like that. And I think if they continue to do what they're doing and they have that worldwide reach as well. Like a lot of people are like, oh, Ring of Honor is the number two, you know, wrestling company in the world. But, I mean, a lot of people in New Japan, and I think that's more likely if you consider comparing on that level. But look at TNA, though, as far as they don't get enough credit for the reach that they have. I mean, they're available in all these other countries. So I think, you know, people are taking that for granted. They have huge fan bases. They have these deals in India. They have these deals in the United Kingdom. I mean, they're strong there and, you know, Japan, other places. So, you know, for the, they don't give them enough credit as far as that's concerned. They're still a brand, maybe not as strong in the, maybe it's not as strong in the United States as it is in the other places, but that makes them attractive as well. There's so many opportunities that they have for growth. I think they're moving forward with that as far as marketing themselves more. I'm seeing a little bit more focus on, you know, selling kind of like on their TNAshop.com, kind of making it more appeal to them. I think, I mean, a lot of people give them heat about producing like an AJ Styles DVD, but I think that's a good way of taking advantage of the buzz that's going on.
He was there, right? He was there. He's hot in the WWE.
Even though the WWE wants to negate his history there, people know that he had a long stint in TNA. So it definitely makes sense. I mean, Scott, only you, me, and Jeff, and I like to hope all the wrestling fans out there in the wrestling world, as we still call that, not sports entertainment, you know, can still hope for and pray that there will be more options and more avenues there. So, you know, we all can enjoy more of it. And again, it keeps people paying their bills too because they have more places to work, which is always a good thing. And obviously we buy a whole bunch of merchandise. So you're listening to the High Spot Podcast with my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. You can catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. He's a promotion contributor for the Miami Herald and also writes for Channel God Magazine. You can catch him on Twitter. Get him down to 16,000 followers. Jeff and I will definitely help
him
as much as you can. Please, folks, please, if you're listening, follow him on Twitter at SM Fishman. Scott.
Appreciate that.
Exactly. Because my nipples are hard now.
And I've done my job.
You've done your job, and you've done it for free. So, you know.
For now,
at least. You and me both, buddy. But, you know, like I said, we can talk to you for hours and hours, because it's always fun to talk to other people who just, you know, have the same passion and the same drive and want to see it succeed. Sometimes you see a lot of nitpickers and a lot of people talking negative, and sometimes it might be it, but I think it's just frustration because you enjoyed so much. You wanted to be there. Obviously, you know, if I have kids one day, hopefully I'm able to tie down some woman. Who knows? But that being said, you know, WrestleMania is coming along. Are you going to this year's WrestleMania in Dallas?
That's the plan right now.
Is it? Oh, so we're going to see him down there.
Hey, man, if we go without seeing you because we'll be there for 4 days, then shame on you. Because I hunted you down for this interview. And so the least you can do is give me a handshake when you get
him?
There.
Did you stalk him?
I stalked you, Scott. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. All right. when are you guys going in?
We'll be there actually the day before. We'll be there on a Thursday. So we're there. We're enjoying it the most. There till the end of Monday Night Raw. And we'll all be taking the red eye back on Tuesday morning. But at the same time, within that time frame, Scott, please keep in contact with us. First and foremost, we want to thank you so much. Gratitude and appreciation from Jeff and I for you even coming on here and talking and taking time out of your day. We know how important that is. We'd love to see you down there in Dallas, catch a couple rounds, first rounds on you. I'm joking.
Is free,
first
so rounds now we on him, yeah.
Yeah, first rounds, first, second, third rounds on us, guys.
All right, sounds good.
And one last thing. Definitely you're a wrestling fan. What match got you into? What was your favorite match you've ever seen?
Oh, man, that's hard. Well, best match, I don't know if it got me into wrestling, but I always remember the match from Halloween Havoc in 1997, Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio.
Yes. Wow.
That's one I can look back and watch all the time. Just
yes.
Like the intensity of it, just the way the two worked against each other. It's like one of the most, I know, it's just a perfect match between the two. And I'm just a fan of both guys so much, so I appreciated that one. That's always one that I look back at, and I think it's an amazing match. So if I could pick one, I mean, it's hard to pick. There's so many, but I would say that one helped make me a wrestling fan, but definitely, cultivated my interest.
Jeff, you better be taking notes, man. This guy knows what he's talking about, and so appreciate Scott Fishman. Scott, thank you so much for coming on. We'll hopefully see you down in Dallas, and we would love to have you back on again.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, take care, man. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Bye.
That was Scott Fishman. Jeff, great interview, as always.
Wow.
With him, he did a plethora of knowledge this guy has.
Really, really brought a lot. And so, again, this is just part of WrestleMania month starting now.
Jeff, always great seeing you again, man. We're going to be seeing a lot of each other in the next couple of weeks, which, hey, I'm not going to complain. I'll deal with the fact of looking at you all this time with that shirt, that bright red shirt you got, like a bowl of Fruity Pebbles, a.k.a. The Rock. But it's always great talking to you, man. We're going to have so much fun talking to all the guests we have coming up in the upcoming weeks. On the road to WrestleMania, folks, join us, won't you? For Jeff Martin, my tag team partner, I am Brian Berger. You've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Again, catch us on Twitter. Be updated on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. We will give you up-to-date analysis of what we're doing just for you guys. Jeff?
Road to WrestleMania begins now.
Take care, guys.